Coming to you from the ancestral territory of the Anishinaabe and the area inhabited by the Haudenosaunee and the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation, this is Earth Matters. I'm your host, Lawson Hunter. Earth Matters examines the impacts we have on the environment and the natural world around us, seeking solutions, reporting on news and events, presenting positive alternatives, and highlighting the steps others are taking. We hope to inspire you to join the many others who are working to preserve and protect a healthy planet. In July of 2018, it was discovered over the course of the previous 4 years, 24 billion liters, or over 5 billion gallons, enough to fill 10,000 Olympic-sized swimming pools of raw sewage, was allowed to flow into one of the major creeks in the city of Hamilton, Canada, not too far from where I live. A gate meant to contain the sewage was left open. Over a year later, there is still no explanation for the oversight. In fact, it wasn't until November of 2019 that the public was even aware of the accident. In over 800 cities in North America, a combined system of stormwater runoff and untreated sewage run beneath city streets. Other municipalities either have septic tanks or separated pipes to avoid contamination. Until recently, dozens of coastal cities continued to dump raw sewage into oceans. Most communities have built sewage treatment plants to safely filter the flow and treat pathogens and other unwanted elements. However, as cities grow, these systems may not keep up with demand. When torrential rainfall occurs, overwhelming systems, they cause either overflows or the controlled release of sewage into surrounding bodies of water. These releases are becoming more problematic, contributing to the serious surface water problems that crop up frequently in the news. Harmful algal blooms are all fed by phosphorus, nitrogen, and other contaminants found in the untreated sewage that, according to the EPA estimates, flows out of America's treatment plants during the 23,000 to 75,000 sanitary sewer overflows that happen every year. A single 2014 storm triggered a release into Lake Erie from Detroit, Michigan, of more than 44 million gallons of raw sewage from sanitary sewers and almost 3 billion gallons from combined sewers. And such releases from Detroit and other cities with sewer outfalls on Lake Erie contribute to the fact that it blooms with algae every summer. In 2004, the EPA estimated the cost to separate all stormwater and sewage systems in the U.S. would cost over $88 billion. Portland, Oregon spent about $500 million on its deep tunnels and pumping system. This has reduced the number of releases into the Willamette River from maybe 50 to 100 per year to 5 to 10 per year. In 1972, the state of Illinois sued the city of Milwaukee and three other Wisconsin cities, alleging they were a public nuisance and asking a court to force officials to address the estimated 200 million gallons of untreated discharge flowing into Lake Michigan every day. When the city finally addressed the problem of combined sewer overflows in the 1980s, it bored a tunnel out of bedrock 300 feet below the Earth's surface, 28.5 miles long and 32 feet in diameter. The first and largest phase went online in August 1993 and produced immediate results. Prior to 1994, the city averaged 50 to 60 overflows a year. Since then, it has averaged 2 or 3. For 2.5 centuries, raw sewage was discharged untreated directly into Halifax Harbor, Nova Scotia. Up to 200 million liters of untreated raw sewage flowed into the harbor every day. Shellfish harvesting from the harbor and swimming within the harbor have been prohibited for health reasons. Sewage treatment plants were proposed for both Halifax and Dartmouth beginning in the 1970s. However, the separate municipalities were never able to reach consensus for system design and construction. 40 years later, a $333 million project was started. The construction of 3 sewage treatment plants and connected various sewage pipe networks with lift stations to treat all sanitary sewage in Halifax. It was completed in 2010, or at least it was supposed to be completed. Construction crews discovered that some of the sewer lines to be connected to the treatment plants had been severed, the result being that all that sewage just sat underneath the city. Finally, by 2015, all lines were connected and sewage runoff flows through one of three treatment plants, unless there's a sudden, explosive downpour. Because we tend to deal with the removal of human effluent in a don't-see, don't-want-to-know manner, and the fact that we are experiencing more and more torrential rainfalls, the problems with runoff and overflow continue to be a huge infrastructure deficit, exacerbated by the amount of hard surface land use that compounds erosion and capacity challenges. Turning back to Hamilton, I spoke with Chris McLaughlin, Executive Director of the Bay Area Restoration Council, a nonprofit organization dedicated to educating the public on the environmental challenges facing the watersheds that feed into nearby Lake Ontario. This was all before the recent news broke. Later, I rejoined Chris to get his reaction on the news of the 24 billion liters of sewage flowing into Shadoke Creek.
Right, so BARC, as we're affectionately known, has been around since 1991, and we represent the public interest in the restoration of Hamilton Harbor. And for your listeners who aren't familiar with Hamilton and the bay here, the Hamilton Harbor was heavily industrialized over the course of the 20th century and before that, and became one of the most polluted, degraded ecosystems in Canada and all of the Great Lakes. And in the last 30 years, there's been a slow, painstaking recovery. And the Bay Area Restoration Council represents the public interest in that process, is a member of the Remedial Action Plan, which is a program, a binational program, to clean up degraded, contaminated areas all across the Great Lakes, Hamilton being the worst on the Canadian side, so to speak, the worst. And we do community engagement and public events and educational programming. For example, in 2018, we had 16,245 students participate in our educational programming, and we do a whole bunch of other stuff as well.
All right. So you oversee what's going on in the Hamilton Harbor, as you said, one of the most polluted sites in North America. Hopefully that's getting better. Education programs, outreach, letting the people in the Hamilton area know what's going on in their neighborhood, because people are busy, they can't keep up with what's going on. Randall Reef development has stretched over years, so the perennial question is it fixed yet? Is it done yet? Is it done yet? And the answer is?
We're getting there. Three steps forward, two steps back on a good year. Mm-hmm. As many people across the Great Lakes will know, the past couple of years have been exceptional with low water levels and then high water levels exceeding, the 100-year flood pretty much across the entire watershed. Mm-hmm. And so you get with high water levels, we saw so many hundreds, thousands of volunteer hours in terms of planting in Coots Paradise Marsh over many years, for example, wiped out. Those areas just didn't survive the high water. And so it's difficult to explain to the general public, like you said, who, might, if we're lucky, dip into these issues on occasion. It's difficult to explain, how those seemingly failed activities, shouldn't cause people to roll their eyes and suggest that the whole thing has just been a waste. And in fact, as with everything in life, right, the challenges that everybody faces in their own personal lives, I think they can relate to the idea that some days are better than others. But generally, you're working hard to get somewhere, to feel like you're getting ahead. And certainly that's been the case with the Remedial Action Plan, or the RAP, as we call it, over the past 25, 30 years. And I should just say, the upgrades to the Skyway Wastewater Treatment Plant, which serves Burlington and Halton, for example, those have already been done. It's one of the best wastewater plants in North America. Hamilton's is underway. The city of Hamilton is committed has committed $132 million to the latest upgrades, for example, mm-hmm. and that's being matched by federal and provincial funding, which is just an enormous project. You know, think of how many other things does the municipality spend that kind of money on. It's not. And so it's going to get its money's worth. The quality of the water coming out of the Hamilton's main wastewater plant by about 2021 is actually going to improve water quality in the bay as a whole. Mm-hmm. Such will be the quality of the water in terms of phosphorus, principally phosphorus. Such will be the water quality coming out of that plant that it'll actually reduce phosphorus levels. And that has a direct impact then on algae blooms, for example, which people see. You know, that's one of the things where the rubber really hits the road, right? Where people at the shoreline can see whether or not the water is clean. Can I see down? I can see fish underwater, or is it just a stinking mass of green and brown filth, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's where people are going to really see the difference. Fingers crossed, right? I mean, it's an ecosystem. So it's not changing the spark plugs in your car, the battery, and then off it goes again, right? Ecosystems are somewhere in between that. My car's not running. My car's working perfectly now, right? Mm. It's somewhere in between, and we can't really put our finger on it exactly. The remedial action plan and the actions that hopefully will lead to the improvements that we can see in the environment, it's very well thought through plan. But again, we're dealing with an ecosystem, and oftentimes, whether it's high water, low water, algae, fish and invasives and so forth, all the issues that we're faced with, we're left scratching our heads to some degree. But over time, contamination levels in the harbor have come down. Mm. We've seen the restoration of – we've seen eagles nesting in Coots Paradise up in the watershed. We've seen the return of walleye, which is top native predator to the harbor, and stories about the winter fishery that's reemerged after it's gone missing for generations, right? So there are signals that are really positive, and you can trend over time the reduction of contamination, the reduction of phosphorus, toxic chemicals, for example. So where we used to have a generally degraded ecosystem, like throughout from top to bottom, from east to west, now we have, with respect to contamination, for example, we've got these legacy problems, which is something everybody across the Great Lakes will understand. Everybody in any industrialized city across the world would understand that, you know, we're still left. The corporation's long gone, right? It was folded 50 years ago, and all the jobs were lost and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And all we've got left is this legacy of all the proud work that, you know, dad or grandpa used to do, and the pile of contamination that we're left to deal with and argue over who's going to pay to fix it.
Right, right. And it must be gratifying to work on something, as you say, that you can visually see. So much of the media focuses on climate change, which the climate change deniers are going to say, well, I can't see a difference, or I don't feel a difference, polar vortexes aside. But to, as you say, go to the shoreline and see the difference, to feel comfortable, to let your children go into the water now, whereas there was always a ban on going into the water, that makes a difference, and it's tangible, and people can realize there is something changing.
Well, we've been running a survey now for about 2 months. People can find that at our website at hamiltonharbor.ca. We've been running a survey. We've got well north of 100 people now responding. The survey is asking about public perceptions. How do you, over your time in Hamilton, whether it's your lifetime or the last 5 or 10 years that you've lived here, how is your perception of the harbor changed? And, you know, how does it smell? How does it look? How does it feel? What do you hear? What do you see? And, in fact, the really neat part is a map that people can upload photographs and descriptions of. I really like it right here because, we've gotten a phenomenal response to that, really, to be honest, to have, you know, 100 and now 120 or so people sit down, take the time to go through, answer a bunch of questions about, you know, what's the water look like? What do you see? What do you like? What do you not like?
What do you do on the shore or?
Yeah, activities, absolutely.
Skating in the winter or kayaking in the summer, canoeing.
This is all part of a project that we started in 2018 to produce some information and a recommendation for the federal government about what to do about one of the categories of the Remedial Action Plan, which is the aesthetic quality of the harbor. And certainly, if you go back to the 1950s and 60s, when the degradation of the harbor, the loss of water quality and habitat and fish and so forth was at its worst, there can be absolutely no question that there's been tremendous improvement in the harbor. And Hamilton Harbor of, you know, days gone by is a relic of an industrial age that we're not prepared to sustain any longer. But that doesn't really matter to the people that have been here for 5 or 10 or even grew up here over the last 20 or 25 years. You know, what was going on in the 1950s isn't really relevant to them, except for the fact that we still have this, it's still this perceived place, mm-hmm, right, that's mm-hmm. heavily degraded. But how do they perceive it now? And the response has been overwhelmingly positive. People are recognizing that they saw an algae bloom, like a really bad algae bloom in 2018. That could have been because of the failed infrastructure in Shadoke Creek, which is one of the channels that feeds into Coots Paradise Marsh, which feeds into the west end of the harbor. The West Harbor being the place where we want people getting safely back into the water and recreating, for example. So the city of Hamilton's failed infrastructure back in the spring dumped a huge volume of untreated raw sewage into the creek channel, which fed into the marsh, which fed into the harbor. And you can see sampling numbers of E. coli in the millions into the hundreds of thousands, and it drops by a zero as we get out into the West Harbor and that sewage is diluted. But it was this massive, something we haven't seen in terms of sewage at the shoreline in decades, right? But mm-hmm. basically what we did was fertilize the West Harbor, and mm-hmm. then later in the summer saw an algal bloom that people claimed, you know, I haven't seen that in decades and I've been boating here since 1975. And I heard lots of these stories, right, that we haven't seen it this bad. So it can't be proven that it was a direct linkage, but there is no other explanation right, that we're being right. given, right? Mm-hmm. So one can only assume that if we fix the infrastructure that performs the sewer system performs the way it's supposed to and keeps the waste out of the water, that the water will continue to get better. And like I said, with changes to the wastewater treatment plant in coming years, we expect the likelihood or at least the conditions for algal blooms to go down. But this is people all across the world are experiencing mm-hmm. algal blooms mm-hmm. for unknown reasons. We had, one of the signature places in Canada, Algonquin Park here in Ontario, experienced closures of canoe routes and lakes being closed this summer due to algae in the summer of 2018. It's a crisis situation in Florida, and for a place that relies on its shoreline to draw tourists from all over the place. It's a crisis all around the world. People are experiencing algal blooms. Scientists are scratching their heads. There are conferences, you know, all over the world with people coming together to try and figure out, and, you know, what can we do about this? And is it linked to climate change? It's probably linked to a lot of things. So land use, agriculture, inputs of nutrients into water from all kinds of sources. And certainly climate change may be playing a role as well. Mm-hmm. Anyways, that's
okay. Well, we're going to take
where we're at.
We're going to take a short break.
Lawson Hunter here, host and producer of Earth Matters. I wanted to thank all the listeners of Earth Matters for your continuing support. As always, please feel free to send us your comments, suggestions, and thoughts on topics and people we should look at for future programs. Email us at earthmatters@newsandcomment.com, newsandcomment.com, or follow us on Twitter at earthmatters3. I'd also like to encourage you to like, rate, and share Earth Matters with others so that our work can reach a larger audience. Thanks for listening. Earth Matters examines the impacts we have on the environment and reports on solutions and alternatives that help protect and preserve a healthy planet.
the whole story of how this could go on for so long is obviously very disheartening. And we'll be looking less, I think, to the past, notwithstanding we're really anxious to get our hands on the ministry's investigation and exactly what went wrong. But we'll be more interested, I think, in the city's response to all of this moving forward and the things that they put in place. The tap water, it comes from Lake Ontario. Hamilton has excellent tap water. And the quality of that water coming out of the tap at your home and mine, that's highly monitored, right? From a minute-to-minute basis, they're monitoring water quality to ensure its safety. These discharges of wastewater from the sewer system through what is a gate, one of these discharge points in the combined sewer overflow tank, they're not as monitored, and some of them aren't monitored at all. Interestingly, the issue of monitoring and the price of the equipment to make these changes and whatnot came up back in January. Interesting now that it came up in January, now that we know that this first report from staff went to council at that time also. But at that point, Brad Clark moved a motion that we were really happy to see. We've been talking to the city quietly for a couple of years prior to that about monitoring sewer overflows, monitoring when bacteria escapes out into the environment in order to make that next step in transparency and accountability, right? It's not a fix, but at least people know, and that's an important piece of the puzzle. Brad Clark's motion at council was for staff to go back and report to council on what would it take to monitor all of these discharges of waste into the environment and then to report on it. The response from Hamilton Water at the time was, I'll just warn you, it's going to be expensive. It's the same thing that they've been telling us for a couple of years, not surprisingly. But I think maybe this changes the nature of that conversation now. It will be seen as more of a necessity than a nice to have, hopefully. And so that we might get a better, clearer indication of the problems that exist out there. And another thing that we'd like to see the city do in response to this is a more proactive searching out of what else might be a problem. Like Portage Oak Creek, honestly, it is one of the most maligned urban waterways in Ontario. It's just been so degraded over the years by, you know, we've talked about a couple of different sources now from individual homes, from the sewer system, from the 403 that crosses over it in several places, runs along it. It is so, you know, down and beaten and battered. I think a more proactive investigation upstream would be a really welcome thing. It's something that RBG, Royal Botanical Gardens, and ourselves, who work closely on water quality issues, we've been doing some of this in the background and are preparing a report on this right now. But we'll be doing that in collaboration with our partner agencies like the City of Hamilton. So we'd like to see some of that reciprocated in terms of, you know, there wasn't a lot of collaborative PR on all of this, and we like to encourage that, right? Bay Area Restoration Council, the City of Hamilton, and all of the other partner agencies in the Remedial Action Plan, we all have different, very different mandates, obviously, but we all share the same goal. And so while I was a little disappointed with the city's press release, it was a little underwhelming and seemed a bit self-congratulatory under the circumstances, to be honest. I was far more impressed, though, with Dan McKinnon, the General Manager of Public Works, his remarks in the paper yesterday. You know, I've known Dan personally for many years, and I can totally imagine those things being heartfelt, right? That he takes this personally, and that it's really gut-wrenching to staff as well. They get up in the morning, they want clean water just as much as I do, and anybody else at BARC, and anybody else across the community. The city departments work in such siloed environments, and so they're concerned with their individual mandates, and to get them to work collaboratively within City Hall is tricky enough. To get them to, you know, to get collaboration throughout the community is challenging, but it's one of the hallmarks of the Hamilton Harbor Remedial Action Plan. It's been one of its key features of the last 30 years, and we don't see that changing. We see that actually, hopefully, you know, out of bad things come positive steps, and hopefully the city and the rest of the RAP community like ourselves can rally around some of these problems and put pressure where it's needed in order to get the funds to move some of these things forward, like public notification of overflows. there are lots of areas where, not just sewage, but the stormwater issue in particular, which is another thing that's going to be coming back to council in the near term, and that is the issue of charging a rate for stormwater to generate the dedicated funds that are needed to go into what's called green infrastructure. So getting away from the rigidity of a system that's built out of concrete and dealing more effectively with water where it falls all across the watershed. So like in my yard and in your yard and in our driveways and in parking lots and so forth, that's going to be a key piece of the picture as well. Because unlike this one, you know, this one very obviously significant, more than significant, I don't mean to downplay it at all, the number $24 billion doesn't escape anyone's attention, right? And that's just gross. And everyone knows that. But we have so many other non-point source, that is, like, not just a pipe that you can point to, but diffuse sources all across the watershed where rain falls and carries contaminants, oils and other materials from vehicles and whatnot. Phosphorus that feeds algae, for example, carries all of that into surface water downstream to the harbor. We have a lot of work to do across the watershed, not just in Shadoke Creek, in order to remediate all of these problems. I think it will prove to be a really signature event in the history of remediation. But it is in the past, right? And the real tragedy for the city from a PR standpoint, and for all of us involved in the Remedial Action Plan, all of us who care deeply about trying to change public perceptions of the harbor, is that this incident has really made what is an uphill battle a whole lot steeper. And so that's for me, the profoundly disappointing thing this morning to face, is the idea that our jobs just got so much harder because, you know, where you've got this sort of contamination all over, you know, anywhere in any watercourse, lake, river, you have it, you know, people are outraged. But often in Hamilton Harbor, you know, you can't swim here. People are like, Hamilton Harbor. What's most important for us as a partner of the city in the Remedial Action Plan is trying to find a way to move forward, to get the funds, to work on to identify the project and then identify the funds that are going to fix the things that are still broken. And I hope out of this that notwithstanding the damage that's been done generally to public perceptions and the trust and the confidence in the city of Hamilton, because it'd be a real shame. I mean, the hundreds of millions of dollars that have been invested in wastewater treatment at Randall Reef, for example, the sewer overflow tank system that's been installed over the last 20 years, hundreds of millions of dollars. And so much of that goodwill, right, and downright celebration, things deserving of celebration have been undone by things like this. And the real tragedy is that all of that bacteria, all of that waste has now been washed away.
Yeah.
It's long gone. And we're left, you know, the city is left holding this little bombshell that blew up on them yesterday. From a PR standpoint, could they have been more proactive? I think, you know, when you're called down to the principal's office, if you fess up, usually the punishment is lesser. That's notwithstanding, I'm not an environmental lawyer. I didn't advise the city to withhold that information, but it's understandable. When you're under an investigation by the province's investigations branch, or the Ministry of Environment's investigations branch, and you hire a good lawyer and you're advised to keep quiet, typically that's good advice.